And a very good evening to all the brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So tonight is 4th of January 2022. So our class will commence again. This is our first sharing for the new year 2022. So as usual, Tuesday class, we will continue from where we stopped. We are following this book. The Wonderful Dhamma Lotus Flower Sutta, Volume 1, Introduction by Venerable Master Xianhua. We are at page 80 of the hard copy and page 47 of the soft copy. Afterwards, the soft copy, you can see it on the screen. We will pin it down there. Just relax body and mind. Then we will have our usual half an hour of awareness based meditation. We will off the light so that you can commence your meditation. I will set the alarm for 30 minutes. Just remember the four support, the first three especially. Just relax. Relaxation is most important. Relax into every mind state that arises. Completely relax your body and mind. Then after that, maintain awareness. Just allow whatever to be, then maintain awareness for as long as you can. The third support is technically 24-hour awareness. Then after that, when you are skillful, when you have stabilized the awareness nature, then you can go to the fourth support, which is trust. Trust your true mind, your true nature to do the meditation so that you are completely relaxed and just aware without any interference from the thought process. So I will set the alarm now and you can proceed and continue with your awareness-based meditation. Those who are referring to the soft copy, we are at page 47. Okay, we are at a new section, last paragraph. You can't take it with you. Once there was a fabulously wealthy old man. He wasn't one of the 10 richest men in the world. He must have been at least among the 100 richest men. He had a beautiful wife and three fine, intelligent sons. But from the time this man was born, he didn't pay attention to anything but money. He ignored his father, his mother, and his own brother and sister. The only thing he didn't ignore was money. He knew money like the back of his hand. It was his best friend and closest relative. He even wrote a verse about it. What heaven has conferred is called money. That which accord with the nature is called money. Cultivation of the past is called money. Money may not be left for a moment. He said, what is given by heaven? Money. What is our life and nature? Money. So money cannot be left for a moment. Actually, this is rather perverted takeoff on the first chapter of the Chinese classic, The Doctrine of the Mean, which means that which has been conferred by heaven is called the nature. That which accord with the nature is called the path. Cultivation of the path is called the teacher. The path may not be left for a moment. So it's actually a modified version of an enlightenment poem. He named his eldest son Gold, his second son Silver. He decided to give his third son an unusual name and call him Coming Obstacle. By the time this third son had grown up, the father was old and sick. He was completely bedridden and couldn't walk. Although he was very rich, very wealthy, after he had been sick for some time, no one looked after him. His beautiful wife kept her distant, and his intelligent son never came to visit him. He greeted his deed and thought, "I hope I hurry up and die." But being dead alone in King Yama's den will be very lonely. I should take someone with me. He summoned his wife, whom he called Madam Money, and said, "I am not going to recover from this lingering sickness or illness. I hope to die soon. Won't you go with me?" Then the wife replied, "How can you ask a thing like that?" She said, "Nobody can die for anyone else. How could you expect me to go or to want to go along with you? Are you sure you haven't lost your marbles?" So the old man called his eldest son, Go, he said, "I have always loved you the most. Do you know that?" "Yes, father," said his son. "I know you love me the most. Well, son, now I'm going to die. Would you go along with me?" "You old blockhead," came the reply. "You are an old man. I'm young. How can you ask me to do something like that? And you claim to be fond of me. If you weren't, you won't ask me to die with you." And he ran off. The old man spoke to the third son, Silver. "Won't you die with me?" "You are really messed up," said his son. "How can you expect me to die just because you are dying?" There was nothing the man could do but call his youngest son, Coming Obstacle. "You are the youngest," he said. "I love you the most. I'm probably going to die, and I can't bear to part with you. What am I going to do?" He didn't dare ask outright for his son to go with him, but the boy caught on right away. "If you love me so much, I will go with you," said his youngest son. The old man was delighted. "You haven't let me down," he said. "I always liked you best, and now I know you are my most filial son." So his beautiful wife won't go with him, and his son Go and Silver won't go with him. The only one who went with his father to the hell was his young son, Coming Obstacle. So it is said. So this old saying is correct. Huh? So it is said, you can't take anything else on your dying day, but your coming obstacle will stick with you all the way. You can't take your gold, silver, and jewelry with you when you die, but your coming obstacle, all the good and bad karma you have created, will follow you like the shadow that never leaves you. So to be born in the blissful land, merely recite Amitabha's name. Just recite Namo Amitabha to be reborn in the land of ultimate bliss and be free of the suffering of the turning wheels of rebirth. Besides, if you want to get rich, the land of ultimate bliss is covered with gold. no purpose. And the old man had awakened and recited Namo Amitabha, he could have taken his son's gold and silver with him, and he wouldn't have been so lonely. This story should serve to warn us to use every last bit of strength we have to do good deeds. Don't wait until you have no strength, until you are dying or your dying moments, because then it will be too late. On the basis of the good roots we have planted in former life, we should nurture our blessings and wisdom in this present life. Now that we have finished telling that story, let's talk about our own story about building a temple. One of my disciples had a lot of land on his farm, and one plot is suitable for building a temple. A temple cannot be built just anywhere. It has to be a place with hills and streams. For example, Nanhua Monastery in China was built by Cao Xi. The name Cao Xi was originally Chinese, but it was expropriated by the Korean monk and later sold in the United States. Some Americans, without any idea of what Cao Xi means, were willing to pay $65 for it. Actually, that's quite a bargain. Anyway, ever since he met me, the disciple had wanted to donate a piece of land on his father's farm in Montana to build a temple. Hopefully, his wish can now be realized. The stupa of many jewels, thus common, is about the wealth from the earth. All kinds of things will be coming forth from the earth. Japanese Buddhism has been in the United States for quite some time. And there is also Buddhism from other countries. However, the proper Dhamma Dao, the mind to mind seal transmitted from Patriarch Bodhidharma, has only reached the United States. The Buddhist group that came to America prior to this include both authentic and phony elements. Some are half-truth and half-false. However, they all serve to pave the way for genuine Buddhism. Now the seeds of Buddhism are being planted, and in future, there will be some new Buddhist disciples. These Buddhist disciples will need a place to stay, so now we are going to build a temple for them. The Surangama Sutra say they were disciples of the Buddha who caused the Dhamma to remain and be upheld. They have fully transcended all existence and were able to perfect the awesome deportment wherever they went. They followed the Buddha in turning the wheel and were worthy of the bequest. Now there are two persons who wants to live the home life, and there is also a person who wants to become a bhikkhuni. Anyone who wants to live the home life must be able to recite the Surangama mantra and the Great Compassion mantra from memory. That is the first test. So those who want to become monks or nuns have to master the Surangama mantra. Only then can you pass the test. Now we are building this temple as a basis or as a basic foundation for American Buddhism. All of you have resolved to support this way place now, because the Buddha instructed you in the past. Establishing and supporting way places echo the greatest merits and virtue. Helping people to leave home and become monks also carry extremely great merits. In Burma and Ceylon, people consider living the home life as extremely important affair. When a person leaves the home life, many people donate money to him. It's also like bribing the person to leave life. Leaving home is considered even more important than getting married. Sometimes, the person's relative, friend, or other Dhamma protectors will hold a feast for several thousand guests to celebrate the occasion. They donate the money to create merits and virtue and help that person leave the home life. A person may not be able to renounce his own wife, children, and property and leave home himself. So he donates money to help others leave home. He specializes in creating merits and helping others in this way. Now we are building this temple, and those of us who have money should quickly use it to create merits and virtue and build the basic Bodhi mandala for Buddhism. Those with strength should offer their strength. No one should fall behind. Everyone should strive to be first. Then this matter will certainly turn out successfully. Building temples for the Buddha is a basic requirement for realizing Buddhahood. If you don't build temple now, when you become a Buddha, you won't have any temple to live in. We ought to build lots of temples. And in the future, when we become Buddhas, we will have our picks of temple to live in. We will be very free. So everyone should advance, not retreat. We should all pool our effort and work together to realize our goal. But the Buddha and Bodhisattvas of the 10 directions will be most happy and full of praise. I, who am your teacher, will also be very happy and full of praise. We all have to build this temple together. Everyone should strive to be out front. No one fall behind. We are pioneers of Buddhism in America. There are many different kinds of flowers. Some flowers bloom, but bear no fruits. They are like people who talk big, but don't act on their words. They may say they are going to build a big Buddha image, for example, but they never do it. This is called a sterilized bloom. Such barren flower represent non-Buddhist religion that appear to be very popular. They cultivate pure conduct and various style asceticism, but they bear no fruits, no accomplishment. They are like the flower that bear no fruits. Other flowers bear many fruits with a single bloom. This represents common people who practice many kinds of filial piety conduct. By serving and making offering to their parents, teachers, and elders, they create such merits, and in the future they can reap many fruits. They may be reborn in the heavens and among people as noble, wealthy folk. This is called one flower with many fruits. Other flowers have many flowers, but only one fruit. This represents the vehicle of the hearers who cultivate many types of asceticism, but obtain only the nirvana with residue. This is called many flowers, but one fruit. Other flowers have one bloom and one fruit. This represents the conditioned enlightened one. They practice living in solitude, deep in the mountain, away from the bustle of human life. Through their cultivation of this one practice, they obtain the position of conditioned enlightened one. Other flowers may be said to bear one fruit. Said to first bear fruit and then bloom. This represents those who have obtained the first fruit of the arhatship, the stream winner, also Tapanashi, who still have cultivation ahead of them. Some flower first bloom and then bear fruit. This represents the Bodhisattva vehicle. The Bodhisattva first cultivation. The Bodhisattva first cultivate and then obtain the position of Bodhisattvahood. However, the various fruit listed above cannot be used when speaking of the wonderful Dhamma. Only the lotus can be used as an analogy for the wonderful Dhamma, because it blooms and bears fruits at the same time. This represents the identity of the real and the provisional teachings. The bloom represents the provisional Dhamma, and the fruit represents the real Dhamma. However, the provisional Dhamma is just the real Dhamma. It is said, the provisional manifests for the sake of the real. Why do the flower bloom? It is for the sake of the fruit. Thus the Buddha spoke the Agama, Vaipuya, and Prajna Sutta in preparation for speaking the Dhamma Flower Sutta. The Dhamma taught prior to this were all provisional, not real, not the ultimate Dhamma. In the Dhamma Flower Assembly, the real Dhamma was taught. The real teaching, the provisional, was open to manifest the real. The preceding teaching were dispensed with, and the real Dhamma was made manifest. This is what is meant by the flower bloom and the seeds appear. As soon as the flower blooms, the lotus seed appear. This represents the opening of the provisional to manifest the real or actual. When the lotus petal fall away, the seed pod stands alone. This represents annulling the provisional to establish the real, abandoning the provisional Dhamma and retaining the real Dhamma. There are also the two gates, the root and the branch, the root and the branches. By way of analogy, the moon in empty space could be called the root, and the moon's reflection in the water, the branches. Although there is only one root, there are countless branches. The branches grow from the root. When the branches are pushed aside, the root is manifest. The doctrine here is the same as that of bestowing the provisional for the sake of the real, opening the provisional to reveal the real, annulling the provisional to establish the real. Within the sutta, the root gate refers to the sutta text before the point where the 16 princes decide to leave home, which was a long, long time ago. Sakyamuni Buddha's recent appearances in the world is called the branch gate. He manifested in the body of a Buddha to teach the Dhamma to living being. Actually, Sakyamuni Buddha did not realize Buddhahood in this Saha world some 3,000 years ago. He realized Buddhahood many long aeons ago. So in the Brahmanet Sutta, he said, I have come to this Saha world 8,000 times. The Saha world we currently live in is a relatively young world. There have been old Saha worlds and prior Saha worlds, which are called roots. The present Saha world is one of the branch. The Buddha Dhamma is infinite and endless. The knowledge and vision, the scope of perception of living being, cannot fathom and reckon it. It is therefore called a wonderful Dhamma. In general, the lotus represents the wonderful Dhamma. The lotus flower is just the wonderful Dhamma. The wonderful Dhamma is just the lotus flower. This is the analogy of the sutta. All sutta have a specific title and a common title. Wonderful Dhamma Lotus Flower is the specific title of the sutta. The word sutra is the common title because all discourses spoken by the Buddha are called sutra. Just as all people are called people, we are all people and have that title in common. Specifically, each person has his own particular name by which he can be identified. Sutra are the same. What sutra is this? Oh, it's the wonderful Dhamma Lotus Flower Sutra. Okay, with that, we go on to the next section, sutra. Just that one is just more like a description of what that things are. There is not much things to really go into. So we just continue. The word sutra can be interpreted in many ways. A road. A sutra is a road that one may travel from the status of a common people to the position of Buddhahood. Or it can be described as basic Dhamma. The sutra are the roots, the foundation of the Dhamma. Or be interpreted as the manifestation. The sutta clearly instruct and reveal to us the principles of the Buddha Dhamma. Or it can be interpreted as a bubbling spring. The principles flow from the sutra like water gushing ceaselessly from the earth. Number five. It can also be interpreted as a guideline. To make guidelines, ancient carpenters and stonemasons used a string covered with black ink. They held the string taut, pull it out towards them, and let it snap against the surface to make a straight black line. The Chinese term for rules is a compound of the two words of compass and T-square. Without a compass and T-square, it is said you cannot draw a circle and square. Such tools are needed for making technical drawings. The flower garland is the sixth interpretation. The principles are linked together in the sutra like flowers woven into a garland. So the word sutra also has four additional meanings. The first additional meaning is stringing together. The meaning in the sutras are strung together from beginning to end in an orderly fashion. This is similar to how a speech is typically organized into several parts, an opening, a review, bringing in a new topic, and returning to the main topic. Then the other additional meaning, the second one, is attracting. Living beings all have their own particular tastes. Sour, sweet, bitter, hot, or salty. Whatever you taste, or your taste, the sutra contains them all. You can find whichever Dhamma Dao you like in the sutra. If you like to investigate Zen, the doctrine of meditation are discussed in the sutra. If you like to study the teaching to lecture on the sutra and teach the Dhamma to living beings, you can study how to do so in the sutra. For example, you will learn that when you explain the sutra, you must first discuss the seven sutra title classification and the five profound meaning. If you like to study the Vinaya and specialize in holding the precept, you can also study them in the text. If you like to recite mantra and practice the secret school Dhamma, you can learn about them in the sutra. Actually, the manifest school also has secret school Dhamma, but it does not exclusively concentrate on the secret school. If you like to recite the Buddha's name and cultivate Pure Land Dhamma Door, you can also study that in the sutta. All the various Dhamma Door are found in the sutta, and according to your disposition, you may cultivate whichever one suits you. Thus, the sutra attracts beings according to their potential and disposition. Then number three is eternal. So this additional meaning very useful. From the time the Buddha spoke of the sutta up till now, the Buddha sutra has not been changed. Not one word can be added to them, and not one word can be omitted. That's why it's called eternal. Then it can also be interpreted finally with the additional meaning as a method. So this last one is the methods set forth for cultivation in the sutta are taught. Are those taught by the Buddha of the past, present, and future? Living beings of the present, past, present, and future, cultivates according to them. Sutra is a Sanskrit word that is interpreted as a tallying text. Above, it tallies with the mind of the Buddhas, and below, with the minds of living beings. The mind, the Buddha, and living beings are not separate. The mind Dhamma, the living being Dhamma, and the Buddha Dhamma ultimately are the same. This has been a discussion of the first of the five profound meaning, that is, explaining the title. Great Master Qi Zhe discussed a single word, wonderful, for 90 days. But really, you couldn't finish in 9,000 or for that matter, 90,000 days. Why? Because it's wonderful. What is wonderful can never be fully expressed in speech, even if you were to explain it for several great eons. It would be hard to finish. So for now, we will merely present this great discussion of the title, The Wonderful Dhamma Lotus Flower Sutta. Then we go on to the next section, Discrimination of the Substance. So this one, I think Mahayana, they are more interested in all this, like how the sutta titles are formulated and how it is to be understood. But it depends. If you have the interest, you want to develop this as an understanding, then you can go into it. But as far as my nature is concerned, it's not really necessary. It's up to you. Anyway, we just quickly go through. Discrimination of the substance. The second of the five profound meaning is the discrimination of the substance. If we don't know the substance of the sutta, how can we expect to be able to understand the principle? Don't worry, I will tell you what the substance of the sutra is. Since I'm lecturing on this sutra, I will certainly tell you its substance. However, if you are nervous and impatient, then when I do explain it, you might not hear it clearly. It's as when a person walks by and you don't pay attention. You don't notice or recognize the person. I'm not going to tell you the substance of this sutra, so you should pay special attention. This sutta takes the real mark as its substance. The real mark is unmarked, and yet there is nothing it does not mark. All marks are produced from the real mark, but all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, sound hearer and conditioned enlightened one come from the real mark as well. And who created the real mark? No one. It is originally there. How did it get there? It was just there. That's all. Why ask such a question? The real mark precedes all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and is the mother of all things. All creation is born from the real mark. So this one is like the source. Huh? Mm-hmm. The wonderful Dhamma Lotus Flower Sutta takes the real mark as a substance, and so all the Buddhas, Bodhisattva, sound hearer, conditioned enlightened one, and all living beings are born from this sutta. But we have been away too long. We have forgotten our original home. We have forgotten our original mother. And so we find the sutta very new. Having the chance to hear a lecture on this sutta is like finding road that will take us back home. Thus, the sutta takes the real mark as its substance. The other way to understand it is like they use the word you have actually debated and get lost for many, many eons. You have forgotten your original home. In fact, we all started from the source, which is the true nature, our true nature, or sometimes they call it the original nature, but not mianmu, original nature. Zixing, forcing, or what they call the oneness nature. So different religion use different name. Some people call it the source, the singularity, means from there everything arises. Then some call it the original nature. They also call it Mother Nature, because Mother Nature was there all the while. So from there, everything springs from. So if you understand it through this type of explanation, then it is more clear, easier for you to fathom. So the third classification is classification of the doctrine. The third of the five profound meaning is classification of doctrine. This sutta takes the cause and effect of the one vehicle as its doctrine. As the text says, there is only one Buddha vehicle. There are no other vehicle. Previously, the Buddha has spoken of the three vehicles: the sound hearer vehicle, the conditioned enlightened vehicle, and the bodhisattva vehicle. He also taught the five vehicles, which are those three plus the vehicle of people and the vehicle of gods. But in this sutta, the five vehicles are dispensed with, and only the one vehicle, the supreme vehicle, or the Buddha vehicle, is expounded. So the doctrine of the sutta is the cause and effect of the one supreme vehicle. Why is the lotus flower used as an analogy? It is because the lotus bloom and bear fruits at the same time. These represent the identity of cause and effect. The cause is the cause of Buddhahood, and the effect is the position of Buddhahood. Thus, the sutra takes the cause and effect of the one vehicle as its doctrine. Then the fourth one is discussion of the function. The fourth of the five profound meaning is discussion of the function. What is the function of this sutta? The function of this sutta is to severe doubts and awaken faith. Without reciting the Dhamma Flower Sutta, great master Shi Zhe became enlightened and obtained the Dharani of the single revolution. On the basis of that enlightenment, he systematized the Tian Tai school. So do not consider this sutra a simple one. All the Buddha, Bodhisattvas, and Patriarchs are born from the Dharma Flower Sutta. Finally is determination of the teaching monk, the fifth of the five profound meanings is determination of the teaching monk. The teaching monk of this sutta is clarified Buddha. As previously mentioned, the five periods of the Buddha's teaching are represented by an analogy to milk product. The Dharma Flower Nirvana period, to which this sutta belongs, may be compared to clarified butter. The analogy of milk product begins with the whole milk straight from the cow, from which coagulated milk is made. Then cow milk is made from coagulated milk, and the butter is extracted from the cow milk. Finally, clarified butter is refined from regular butter. Clarified butter is the most delicious thing in the world. Nothing else has such a fragrant aroma. Just talking about it makes one smile water. But don't worry. Now that I'm lecturing on this sutta, you will taste this wonderful flavor and you will know how fine it really is. This has been a great explanation of the five profound meaning. Okay, at least we covered. So we will stop here. This is part three. We finished part two of the introduction. Then there will be a part three regarding the title, the translator. So for those who just join us, like I mentioned before we start the class today, today is our first lesson of the year 2022. So once again, we'd like to wish everybody a good, happy, prosperous and blessed new year. So hopefully all kilometers can have great blessings. If you can bless yourself with great virtue and wisdom, that will be the best. Then you will progress along the path of Dhamma beautifully. So whatever blessings that you have, make sure you make full use of it to cultivate, to develop all the understanding. And also a sincere wish for all kilometers to be blessed with good health, good life, and also good condition for continuously strive on with heedfulness to realize the path and friction and fulfill whatever good and noble wishes that you may have so that you can be a blessing to all. So as usual, hope everybody will have good life, good health, and good mind states to be of blessings to all. Okay, so that is for your new year blessings. So now we can actually open up for second session, which is meditation reporting. You can also make use of this opportunity to say whatever you want for the new year, make your resolution or whatever new year resolution or aspiration.
Good evening, Sambra, to you. Okay, I'll be tasked. I'm back. I just came back this Sunday. So I would like to take this opportunity just perhaps maybe to share some of my experience over my cell retreat for the past.
Very good. Okay.
Yeah. And it's actually a very good overall year end resolution, is it?
Yeah,
because I understand that I actually started to understand, you know, your teaching. Started from I start to feel my heart beating, you see. The talk start to, you know, go in, you see. and I really thank you for the whole, you know, teaching and advice over the, you know, past few years, and especially the past 1 year when I do my reporting, you see. And I actually took all this opportunity, to take down all the recording so that cell retreat, I listen back again, you see. And it was really amazing, you see. And I over the cell retreats, it's because it's each of us, we have no interaction, so we are just doing our own, you see. Over these periods, I do a lot of readings. Listen to your talk again, the mini YouTube, you see. I personally download all the YouTube which I think is relevant to me, you see. And doing like asking for forgiveness and I'm quite amazed when I look back at the, you know, the Heart Sutra appendix 3, Krishnamurti.
The saying.
I sort of like, you know, I was so amazed that, you know, I missed out so many things the last time.
Without you knowing it, you know, that time you can't comprehend. These are rather deep aspect of cultivation. Unless your mind has transformed, you can't really penetrate the teaching, and the understanding of it will not be easy. Very good.
Especially like, you know what Krishnamurti say, it's really, you know, talking about the awareness is not like, you know, self-induced. It's not a practice, you see. It's really an understanding, you see.
Discipline type of activity.
Really, it's so meaningful, you see. And it stand out, and really, like what you say, it's go with your capacity, you see. When your capacity is so much, you can only absorb so much, you see.
Understand. Very good.
I really found it very amazing that, you know, when I look back and the aesthetics, I say, wow, I miss out so much, and now I can sort of like understand. Of course, maybe my understanding level, maybe, you know, to this, but at least compared to last year, you know, last year I just reading the words, you see, really reading the words, you see. But now
you cannot really comprehend. Now it's different. Over the years, you have actually learn and develop the understanding. That's why you have progress, and because of that, you start to have the ability to comprehend, and this will continue. Then as your faith develop, your understanding develop, your nature will start to move again and transform again. So what you have done is very good. How many days total?
It was actually 10 days, is it?
Oh, very good. Because for people like Chin Hao and most of these people who are still involved in the lay life, the career and all these things, they have their duties. So most of the time, they don't have the luxury of full-time cultivation or practices. So this cell retreat is something that will help if you know how to make use of it. Of course, in the name of self-retreat, you must be serious. You must have the faith. So like what you have done is very good. You all are alone most of the time. No interaction, nothing. Then you make full use of your time to actually develop the cultivation, the understanding, and the self-practice, leading to whatever understanding. And this one is done over a period of even 5, 8, or 10 days is very good, because the momentum carry through and your mind has been trained to be in that state of silent inner awareness. Then that mindfulness will stabilize. That's why this type of training is very good. It's like our retreat, the normal 9-day retreat at Sanbao Si, Cameron Highland. So if you have the opportunity to do it, you should do it, because during that 8 to 9 days, it's very different. The transformation, the faith, the amount of wholesomeness that you develop if you have the understanding to do it with faith, with sincerity and understanding, then you cultivate in accordance. The wholesomeness is beyond people's normal ability to comprehend. Yeah. And all this can bring about great changes and transformation. So what you have done is good, Sadhu, to you, Chinna. You continue with your
discussion. Yeah, it's really very true, you see. Because last time I have attended a lot of retreat, but it's just for the sake of retreat, you see.
Yeah.
But now I actually know the meaning of, you know, make use of it, like what you said, really make use of it, you see.
Yeah, make full use of it.
Yes. and it's true that because of the amount of day, it actually create the momentum, you see.
Yeah, the momentum. Carry through. And your mind become very different. You are not burdened with anything at that time. At that time, you will have the full 10 days to just cultivate, develop the understanding. Then when you go through such training, it will transform you. It make you very different.
Especially like for me, because I have told you that my sleeping quality wasn't very good. Over the retreats, I did a lot of like lying down meditations. And this, wow, I tell you what, really, brother, I really love lying down, you see. I can, you know, it's really rejuvenate my health, my body.
Your health, yes.
Yes.
You will feel the rejuvenation and the, what they call, body like different. It is so calm, so still, so tranquil, and the energy is so beautiful. The stillness of it, it will heal you. And it will improve your immune system and many other things.
So when I did the lying down meditation, is the reason why I love it so much is because I'm able to settle down. And then it can, you know, the heart feel, the heart beating is getting stable. And at first you can feel that it's very fast. And then very fast. And then later on, it gradually settled down slow.
Yes,
And there was time that very quiet and,
very subtle and very still. Then you feel like no heartbeat. Deep of consciousness will come. You suddenly feel that nature itself within, so still. This is what tranquility of mind is all about. The mind has become very quiet, very still. There are no more sankara, no more thought activity, no more stirring, no more movement. Then within that nature is just the awareness. You must stabilize that to understand. Then when you become curious, the thought come out again. I see that the thought is very near that nature. Then you start to understand from that nature, all sankhara, thinking, thought process arise. Then from that nature, it enable you to become conscious of things. Develop the ability to sense to be sensitive, to feel, to be aware, then all those mind state that you create become clear how the mind function, how you behave as a human being, how your views, opinion, and conditioning stir your mind. But when you are with the awareness-based meditation, you realize the memory, the conditioning, the views, opinion, and belief system, all they doesn't come in and disturb you. You are at that moment very peaceful, very quiet, very tranquil, very still. And this is the deconditioning part that transforms your mind. Then you start to understand how you revert back to the normal, heedless living. Means through your own habitual tendency, views, opinion, and conditioning. So after the retreat, or as you come out of the retreat, you will see how your senses starts to function again. Then how the external sense data come and make contact. Then how the thought process come in again. Then how the content of consciousness went in. And initially it is not so what they call it doesn't have that power or effect to stir you like before, because you just came out of the retreat. But then you will be able to witness how you slowly, slowly return to normalcy of the daily life, and how your mundane mind starts to come back and do all those things. Then you start to develop the ability to understand the big difference between heedful living and heedless living. Heedful living is when you are in the meditative state with the spiritual faculty without the mental hindrance. Then you are most of the time aware and heedful. Then you can apply the Dhamma, the Yoniso Manasikara, to live life. But when you are heedless, the mental hindrance take over. Then you will go back to the old habitual way of reaction from memory and all that. So you will see this very clearly. Then you start to understand the danger of heedless living. Then from that moment, you vow not to be heedless again. You will determine very strongly to walk the path of Dhamma, to train yourself so that you are all the time aware, mindful, heedful, and you will not revert back to the old way. Yeah, the heedful way is so beautiful, so transformative, and so full of understanding and virtue that you can develop the penetrative awakening as compared to the heedless way where you entangle yourself, create negativity of karma, and become afflicted. Then constantly your mind stir and react with the duality and all that. And that is heedless living, which is not life at all. That one is delusion, creating karmic, unending karmic conditioning. So once the mind starts to develop this ability to see all this very clearly, then it will never revert back to the old way. Means your mind will never become heedless again. That is the beginning of true understanding, true cultivation. Then you will determine and you will be able to develop the cultivation even in the midst of life. Then that time, whether you go for self-retreat or you don't go for self-retreat, your mind is still in the state of tranquility, stillness, heedful, meditative state. When you can do that, then your daily mindfulness stabilizes. Then you become aware throughout the day. Then you become different. Then whenever you go for a retreat or go for all this type of so-called self-retreat or training, you settle down very fast. You become very different. And you understand the beauty of heedful living. Then when you want to go deep into the meditation, you understand and you can do it. So this is what meditation is all about, right? Jinhao, Sadhguru.
Yeah, precisely, Brother Teo. Like today when I, you know, start to dry out, you know, to do my work, you see. And in the traffic jam, I can notice the driver in front, you see, really very heedless. When the person was driving, he actually is another finger was calling the handphone, you know. And I was like, wow, it's so dangerous, you see. And
that's why
I was like, oh,
with mindfulness you are sensitive, you can feel all this, then you can sense all this. That's why there is joy, and you understand people are just the way they are. If they are not trained, they tend to behave that way. That's what heedless driving and heedless living is all about. And there's a big difference. That's why you become more calm, more composed, more aware, and you are sensitive. And your driving all become very different. And from the awareness nature, you become aware of outside. Then you finally blend in into life. And finally, you become normal again. So initially is after the retreat, you come out, you determine to be aware. Then you develop until your mindfulness become very stable. Until throughout the day, you are just aware, mindful, ever mindful, constantly meditating. Then you will continuously cultivate until you awaken. And when you awaken, finally, when the understanding all fall into place, you become normal again. And then you can go back to the normal life. Then you can fit into life. Whatever the condition, you can just accord and flow. Your Dhamma understanding, your Yonisokmana Sikara will take care of everything. Then you can live life. There is joy. You can live life to the fullest. You can get to experience all of the pristine and wonders of life. Then life take a turn and become very different. That's why you will have a lot of joy, a lot of understanding. Then you can actually develop a lot of smile. I remember during the early day, these were very joyful moments. Then you continue to transform until finally I realize after many years, I become normal again. I can talk with people in a normal way. I can joke with people. I can do whatever people wants to do. But to reach that state is not easy. That one is the Mahayana say the third level of seeing, Kansan, Yususan. But when you reach the second stage, it's already very good. Kansan, Pususan. That is the stage you have to cultivate until very stable, until the penetrative understanding, the awakening all come. Then reflect, contemplate, stabilize all this until that Yonisokmanasikara, wisdom. At the moment of sense experience become very stable. That every moment of sense experience is different. The understanding is there. The Dhamma is there. The Yonisokmanasikara is there. Then you will know how to act. Then you start to understand all my sharing in a very different way again. Then you have clear understanding of what life is all about. How you can actually live life, how you act. You no longer act with delusion from memory, from your conditioning, your views, your opinion, your belief system, your conditioning, all this gone. You know, these are all heedless living, wrong way of action and living. The only true action is when you act with wisdom, following the Dhamma way, which is Noble Eightfold Path, the essential Dhamma, the teachings of the Buddha. So that one, when it surfaces, you become very different. So all these are interconnected. That's why your today sharing bring forth the condition for me to explain further so that you can actually get better and better understanding along the way. Okay, Chino, sadhu.
Yeah, sadhu, sadhu, pratyo. And looking at the driver in front, it really struck me. You see, I mean, it was like I was like her before in the past.
Yeah.
And it was so dangerous, and I was really grateful that, you know, over so many years I didn't have any accidents.
Your blessing, your good blessing.
And it was really, looking at her, the way she drove, I would say that really so dangerous.
Yeah.
You know, her the one hand was on the steering wheel and one hand on the phone, you know. Oh, really scary, is it?
That's why they say if accident don't occur for this person, it's a miracle.
Yeah, that's correct.
They are heedless. And most of them get into trouble because they don't have the understanding. That's why they behave the way normal people behave. Heedlessly, they live their life. Heedlessly, they drive around. Then they have emotion, everything. So all this together with karmic evil entangle them and give rise to a lot of what we call unnecessary misery, suffering, afflictions. Good.
Yeah. That's why I really thanks Brother Tio, because you know, all this Dharma teaching, understanding, it is like set a campus, you know, compass on us, you know, like how to live our life.
Yes.
You know, and how to train our mind and not to be deluded by the thought. Over the retreat, I really can see the power of a thought, you know, how you know, it affects us, you know, dry us.
So
I really thank you.
Create all the duality. Create all the affliction, all the suffering, the misery, the fear, how it project, divide, and create all this delusion in you, in the living being. That's why the phenomenal world of form, the phenomenal world of thought, they actually have great power over the heedless or the deluded living being, sentient being. Without the Dhamma, you will be entangled and you will get into big trouble. Your karmic nature will fall. You will get yourself deeply entangled into karmic negativity. Then that will cause your karmic downfall, leading to suffering, affliction, misery. So living beings, fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, and lamentation come from their lack of understanding of life, because they lack Dhamma. Once they have Dhamma, they won't become like that. So like now, you are very clear about this teaching, this path. So you will have a lot of gratitude towards the Buddha, and you will actually value it, treasure it. They use the word cherish. You will cherish it very, very closely to your heart. Yeah, this is priceless. Money cannot buy. And this type of understanding can really free and liberate the living being. Give rise to wisdom, awakening, understanding, so that you will never go back to the old way, which is hiddenness. So all this understanding is what the teaching is all about. And when you discover them, you will appreciate it a lot, and you will cherish it, and you will really have deep gratitude towards the Buddha in his, and great compassion and loving kindness to share this with the world free. Sadhu. Very good. You know, sadhu.
Yeah, and one also quite amazing thing was that my blood pressure, you see,
dropped.
That is back to normal, you see.
Yeah, back to normal. You will go back to normal, drop.
I was so amazed. I was like, because I remember once there was one time you say, you know, yeah. If you're able to relax yourself with yeah. meditation and all those things, yeah. you are able, you're, that's why you say that you don't have any heart.
Yeah, you know, I don't have BP problem since birth until now. I never have BP problem. Even when I'm working, stressed out and all things, I never have BP problem. Because I know how to relax, maintain awareness, then I go into Anapanasati very fast. I settle down and become very calm and very peaceful again. So my heartbeat, my BP, all the time, very good. 120, 80. Most of the time, it's not that. Sometimes 125 or 24, then 80 plus, about that.
That's why it really give me a further faith, you see. Mm. Like you know, because without medication really I mean my pressure was really high, you know.
Yeah, you know? Most people have BP problem, they need medication. And I have known a lot of classmates in the uni, they have been on medication since the age of 20 something. Because they say their BP very high. And a lot of other kayamitar, they all, I mean the early batch one, they also told me they have this BP problem in the early days before they joined the class. Then as they joined the class, most of them actually, the BP went back to normal. Except those who don't know how to develop the ability to relax and maintain awareness or do anapanasati and all those things. That one, some of them still continue to take medication, the BP pill, they call it. But nowadays, the BP medication are, I think, quite advanced. So not much side effect, I believe so.
Yeah, but this is really a very good condition for me to sort of like reflect and understand, you know, yeah. how, because of the emotion and the relaxation, it actually direct effect on our subconscious mind, and then eventually it affect the BP, our BP.
We have mind condition, the body. The body actually also subject to a lot of external factor. So the main one is the mind. When the mind is peaceful, calm, tranquil, the body function very well. The life force, the nature, they function very well. Then your health, your whatever immune system also function very well. But when there is stress, when there is mental issue and problem, then what happens is this mundane mind become affected. The fear, the worry, the anxiety, the stress. This one create condition for the blood pressure to increase, especially when you are angry, fearful, emotional, your heartbeat start to palpitate and very fast. Then when it happens, it will actually trigger off what they call negative energy field that causes your immune system to go down. Then all this will disrupt your physical, your what they call imbalance. They call it the chi flow is affected, upset. So if you are under that state of stress for most period of your waking moment when you're working or living life, then you realize it costs you a lot of stress and negative, what they call emotion and energy field. And your body is almost 80% filled with liquid water. So those negative energy field, like fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, lamentation, stress, all this will create mutation in your water elements, forming that type of mutated crystal. The scientists will know. That is how they develop cancer where the cell starts to mutate, the immune system starts to break down. Then what they need is, without them knowing, they need to actually learn how to meditate or develop the ability to go back to their natural state of tranquility and stillness, so that their thought process, their thinking mind, do not interfere when they sleep. And then you will have good sleep. Then during that time, your nature's what they call life force will come and heal you. That's why at night, when you have enough sleep and rest, you recuperate. It will heal you. But because of the stress, that living being that has been hitless throughout the day, even when they go and sleep, the fear, anxiety, sorrow, lamentation, and the stress, they bring along with them while they sleep. And they can hardly sleep because the subconscious and the unconscious fear, worry, anxiety, or phobia, that movement is still there, inside there. That's why they find it very difficult to sleep. They have insomnia and all those things, and they hardly have any proper deep sleep. So you know how to meditate. You just relax, maintain awareness, and you go into the meditative state. And from there, you accord and flow with the life force at the heart there, the pulse of life, away. Then it becomes very subtle, very still. Then that is the minimum, what they call resistance. So when there is minimum resistance, means your subconscious and your unconscious doesn't interfere, then you become very beautiful. Then the healing process starts. That's why after a good night's sleep or rest, you will recuperate, you will recover. So all this you can find out. Once you have this understanding, you can start to develop the understanding. That's why you will come to realize this very important point. Your mind is very important. That's why now the medical field also, they want you to understand this. Mind, medicine, and physical bodies, medication, medicine. So they go with both the approach. They use medication, and they at the same time try to treat your mind. But their mind, at the moment, they don't have the real Dhamma. They only use their normal, what they call psychiatric type of treatment, psychology and psychiatry. It's mainly about the thought process and teach you how to actually develop the what they call ability to de-stress, not to like entangle yourself. So these are skillful means, or what they call short-term measures. But most of the time they use the drug to bring about the tranquility of my stillness of my day, knock you off and make you sleep. That's why those with insomnia, they give you this type of drug. They call sleeping pill, or what they call tranquilizer. They tranquilize you and make you do so. But initially it worked for a while. Then after a while, it doesn't work. Most of them, when their depression or mental problem become very severe, there are a lot that came and see me. When I talk to them, I realize they cannot sleep. Insomnia is really something very severe, and they become like very frustrated, suicidal thought, everything. Is it like make them crazy? They say actually when you cannot sleep, it's like hell. Actually, it's very, very traumatic. But you know how to meditate. It's very simple. You just relax, silent, and you just go into the awareness state, and the mind becomes very quiet, still down, become very tranquil. Then you want to sleep, you just sleep, and you will have good, very sound, deep sleep. And you need to rest, maybe initially, 10 minutes, of rest is already very good. Then later on, you need half an hour. Then later on, much, much longer as you age, maybe you need 1-2 hours. It's very good rest. Then from there, you recuperate and you become very different. Then when you attend retreat, then you go for a long duration of meditative self-retreat or normal retreat, you actually become different again. So all this you can find out. You can experiment for yourself and develop self-knowledge, self-understanding of how the mind is so important. That's why the Buddha said, take care of mind. You take care of mind. Mind will take care of your karma. When you take care of karma, karma will take care of your life. That's why it's all interrelated, connected. When you are heedful, mindful, tranquil, you are beautiful. But when you are heedless, agitated, and having the what they call mental problem, you become miserable. Affliction is everywhere, and it will continue to afflict the heedless living being. That's why Dhamma is very important. Ability to train yourself to be heedful, to be ever mindful, constantly meditative, to have all this understanding is very important. And the learning of the teaching leading to wisdom is most important. If wisdom cannot arise, there is no way you can free your mind. Then you will entangle yourself everywhere. That's why Yoniso Manasikara, wisdom, born of Dhamma understanding, is very important. This one will prompt you. Every moment of sense experience when you live your life, it will be there to prompt you, to let you understand that you will not be deluded anymore. You will not entangle yourself anymore. Everything that arises, you are able to accept the reality and be at peace. Then you can actually accord and flow and move. Do what you have to do. Do your duty. Apply Noble Eightfold Path. Be a blessing to all. All this will surface as understanding. So these are the more and more refined practice understanding that one will develop as a cultivator. So Chinao, very good. So once you see all this, you will be able to understand how you can improve your health. These are the benefits of awareness-based meditation. Yeah. It brings about not only inner peace, inner calmness, inner awareness, but it at the same time give you the clarity of mind, improve your health, allow you to have the wisdom to live life, to act, to be sensitive, to develop self-knowledge, to insight into phenomena, to awaken. That's why these are all meditative, very beautiful. Okay, so now you continue. Yeah.
Yeah, as just like what you say, really I benefited a lot on the lying down meditations because I noticed the rest with awareness is totally different.
Yeah, totally different.
And the posture, you know, when you relax, when you lie down, it's really like what you say, it's a total relax, you know.
Yeah.
You are totally relaxed because you don't cross your leg, you don't restrict any of the chi flow, and you don't have to like force yourself to sit through and all those things. So the lying down posture is the most relaxed posture. But as you lie down, you can also move. Sometimes you can move like lean towards the left or the right, or adjust your posture mindfully within the meditation. Because sometimes the guests get trapped. When you do this type of meditation, you can know a lot of the byproduct become gaseous. Then it will cause you to release the guest or the fund and all those things. So you will know where it is blocked, and then you adjust your posture. It will come out, it will release. So all these are the more refined type of adjustment. But initially, what you go through is just that ability to be peaceful, relaxed, and become very naturally tranquil and still. That itself is good enough. Then you will go through that for quite a while. Before the later on, when you have the understanding to be more and more relaxed, but that state of relaxation is actually an art. There are many, many levels and stages of relaxation. Initially, you think you already relax enough, but actually not yet. Then you try. Then with better understanding, then you are able to be just like totally relaxed until you are a dead person. That is really absolute ability to relax. Then every time you lie down to rest, you are in that state of relaxation. Then you recuperate very fast. You become very calm, very peaceful, and very still, very fast. So all this you can try, and you will develop skill and understanding of it. That's why the lying down meditation is one of the most appropriate posture. That's why the Buddha, before his parinibbana, he did the lying down posture. In the early day, he sit in the sitting posture because the tradition and the lineage around that time is all the cultivator, they sit. So that's why they started with sitting. And during the olden days, they don't have real proper chair and all those things. Most of the time they sit on the ground. And even if they have carpet or whatever, they will sit on it. Then sometimes they have maybe a wooden block where you can sit on it and all those things. But those are the what they call added support to allow the human being to have those posture. That's why as civilization progress, I observed when I was in my 50s when I was born, then 60s when I grew up, my house, not much chair, very few chair. Because my father did the sensei business, he need the long bench to do the before opening in the center to do the shaving of the medicine yao cai where he put the block to shave they call pao. So apart from that, we don't have much chairs. So most of the time when people come, we sit on stool and on the floor. So on the floor, last time is on the cold floor. We don't even have proper carpet or what. So it's a normal posture. That's why we sit on floor. Then we skip during that time. We are very simple. Very simple. But now, as society evolve, we become more sophisticated. Our chair also got cushion padding. Then we got safety. We got armchair and all those very comfortable chair. So all this has evolved. But more important is the posture is up to us. Like the Buddha said, you can develop mindfulness in any posture. Even under Kaya Nupassana, after Anapanasati, the training of the mind to be aware, you go into the four posture: standing aware, walking aware, sitting aware, lying down aware. So these are the posture where you can develop mindfulness and awareness. That's why when it comes to meditation, mind training, for me is any posture as long as they are conducive and suitable for you. That's why finally I realized the lying down posture is the most conducive. As I finally, I also did a lot of lying down. That's where I find myself able to go through the transformation. Then when I understood that, I started teaching that. Because it's like never thought before, this lying down posture. When you lie down, most people will actually like have negative idea. What are you doing? Are you sleeping? Well, most people lie down, they sleep, they snore. So the problem with lying down is you cannot maintain awareness. But because I went through the training, I know I can maintain awareness. That's why I told you all, have faith, do it. Then when you are about to like become unconscious or drop into the subconscious and go into the sleep, you will know, because most people snore. The moment you snore, the awareness pick it up. So initially it's just relax, maintain awareness. Then you will fall into the sleep because you are new. Never mind, let it happen. Then the snoring will happen. Initially, you may not be aware. You snore for a while, then only you become aware. If you're too tired, you tend to sleep. Especially for Jinhao last time when you started, I remember, you're too tired. Then later on, as you become more and more stable and aware, then you have the ability to hear your own snoring. Then after that, most of the time, it's only one sound. Before it even finish, you already aware. Then the awareness there, away. Then until the next sound, when you are tired, you're about to fall into the subconscious or the unconscious, then again you are away. You maintain that training until the awareness become very stable. But if you are tired, the body really want to sleep, want to rest, then you just let it go to rest, let it sleep. Then forget about meditation, just sleep. Then after that, the moment you come out of that sleeping state, develop intention to be aware. Last time I remember, the moment I become conscious, I determine to be aware. Then from there, I aware my posture, then I mindfully arise, then I pay my respect wherever I am, to the Triple Gem in any direction. Then after that, if I want to sit, I want to meditate, I will do it. Then later on, I make it a point in my house, when I come home, I will pay respect first. That time I was training, I always do that. Then before I leave the house, I also pay respect. I go to any temple, first thing I go to is the Shaolin Hall, pay my respect, then do my short routine, recitation. Then after that, I come out and mindfully move around. Then before I leave, I do it again. So all these are religious routine that you maintain so that the faith, the training is always there. And in between the daily mindfulness, determined to be aware every moment, every instant from inside out. That will stabilize your daily mindfulness. And this is how you train. Then when you have this type of training stability, you go to retreat, you settle down very fast. You are in the meditative state very fast. Then for us, because we have our classes Tuesday, Thursday and Sunday, then sometime before the pandemic, we also have our monthly, our dana, then our spiritual trip. And at times, we also have our, what they call, gathering. So all these are very conducive for training our mind, developing mindfulness, awareness, Dhamma sharing, Dhamma activity, and the wholesomeness that arises is really limitless. Then with that type of understanding, that faith, and the parami that you develop, you will progress very fast along the path of Dhamma. So all these are beautiful understanding and training and cultivation, which we really need to really seriously pay attention to and develop them. So today, I think Jinhao has given you a very good condition. Let us rejoice with his good condition and sharing. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, Jinhao, you can continue. Yeah.
And one more thing I also sort of like discover is that how much your ability to relax is actually on par with your understanding.
Yeah,
is it?
Yeah.
Correct.
Yes, that is very good. Yeah. Yeah, your ability to relax depends on your understanding. Yeah.
Because like what you always mentions, silence the mind and don't do anything.
Yeah.
It's just a few words, but tell you what, brother, it required a lot of understanding.
Yeah. To really understand. Yeah.
Because so, it's not as just, you know, it sounds simple, you see, but it's not. It's...
Yeah, because it's very profound. Very profound. Only the cultivator understand. Just silence your mind, relax. Don't try to know. Don't do anything. The problem with human beings is they don't listen to the words to develop the understanding and just do. They go and think. What type of meditation is this? Huh? Don't do anything. Don't try to know. Then what am I doing? Sleeping. You know, people cannot understand. So they are doubt. They lack faith. That's why they cannot penetrate. That's why I say meditation has to be developed or done with understanding. When you understand, then you will know how to do. Why do I say silent the mind? Because when you silent the mind, you don't think, is it? So what is the awareness before the thinking, before the perception, before the knowing? So how to become aware? Silent. Relax and maintain awareness. Don't try to know. When you try to know, you create thought. When you try to do also, you create thought. Who is doing? The thought is doing. So, trying to know and trying to do is all by the mundane mind, which is the thought process. That's why to be in the state of silent inner awareness, your thought must cease. And for your thought to cease, the best way is to relax into whatever mind state that arises. Then just let things be and maintain awareness. Just aware, finish. Aware, finish. Whatever that arises at your senses, the sixth sense, when it arises, let it arise. Don't resist, don't control. Just let it be. Thought arise, let it arise. You assist. Whatever that is of the nature to arise is of the nature to cease. So just silently observe that and let it happen. Then you start to develop deep, clear understanding of what nature is. Everything within nature follows this law of dependent origination. Dependent on certain conditions, things arise. When the conditions cease to be, that phenomena cease to be, then you realize everything is dependent originating, condition arising, causal phenomena. He know you, he know me, no reality. Everything is just a condition arising phenomena, supported by condition, sustained by condition. And supporting condition cease to be, it cease to be. And when you come to understand that very clearly, then you realize the phenomenal world is a phenomenal world of consciousness supported by condition, nothing else. That's why the Buddha called it the conditioned world. The conditioned world is what Paticca Samuppada is all about. So within the conditioned world, we have so many things, the Dhamma, life, existence, law of karma, law of mind, law of truth, everything. But out of the conditioned world, there is the unconditioned. The Buddha say, it is not because of the existence of the unconditioned world, escape from the conditioned world will be impossible. So that statement is very powerful, very clear. Escape from the conditioned world is not possible if there does not exist the unconditioned. That's why this unconditioned is so different from the conditioned world. The unconditioned world is that nature within. We cannot talk about it. There is beyond word, beyond thought. There is nothing inside there. That's why it's true suchness. Tatata. That reality. That nature. That's why I always say it's an awareness nature. It's not a being. It cannot come out and live life. But that nature can be realized. Your awareness nature can be with it. Yeah, that is the first thing that come out from the source. Then from there, all of the creation start. So you have to see that awareness nature, then develop the wisdom, then silence everything and let it cease to realize the unconditioned or Nibbana, the oneness nature within, that everything becomes clear. Then from there, if there is condition for your form and mind to continue to arise, then it will come up. Yeah. Then it will create all of the movement that is needed to animate the form and mind again. Then you become alive again. That's why when you enter the cessation, the form and mind ceases, even the pure awareness also gone, completely still. And you cannot talk about it, because there is no mind, nothing, no word, nothing inside that. It's just that nature that ceases itself. Then it enters the unconditioned. So this unconditioned is not to be analyzed or reasoned or use thought to try to comprehend. It's beyond thought, beyond mind. That's why this one, there is no mind, nothing. You cannot talk about it, you cannot describe it. It is beyond all this. So this understanding is to be realized. The form and mind that sees, that goes into this, is a realization. That's why this is pachetang. To be realized by the wise, each for themselves. They will go through the cessation. They will experience this unconditioned state. Okay? Very good.
Yeah, sadhu, sadhu, gratitude. And then lastly, I would like to make a New Year resolutions. Like, you know, that I will strike on with heedfulness and then continue to strengthen my five spiritual faculty. And spend more time on cultivation and understanding. All right. And will hope that eventually I can live my daily life as is like in the retreats, do you say?
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, we all should rejoice. Very good. Sadhu to you. Sadhu. 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 Very good. So,
sorry, one last thing is like also, I really thank you, Brother Teo, and Mrs. Teo, you see. You know, for all the support and also teaching, is it really easy? Three times a week is really not easy, is it?
Yeah.
And also,
thank Mrs. Teo. She's very patient. Very supportive.
Correct, correct. Mm-hmm. And also Sister Sui, is it? Because I think I foreseen the Zoom classes will carry on for quite some time, so I think.
Yeah,
so
in this guy that Sui came back. Huh?
That's right. Yeah. So really thank you all the support, and then I will make a vow that I will continue to support all your Dharma works.
Yeah,
and all the sasanas will.
Yeah, yeah. That's why we are very grateful to you. You did a major role in setting up the website and helping us to do up all this recording, editing, and all this thing. You complimented Sui a lot and helped us maintain the website. And you coordinated with Brother Lau. These are really beautiful work. And setting out all the website also together with Brother Teo. So all these are very wholesome. Then now Pamasuri and Brother Teo, I think they are moving into another phase. They have renovated their neighboring unit. So now they have already a Shy Hall Retreat Center, or what we call self-practice. Dharma house for all Kayamitas who are serious, sincere, and keen. So all these are beautiful. Then I heard from Brother Timo, he may think of opting for maybe, I don't know, it was full retirement or optional retirement, or maybe partial retirement, I don't know. He may decide that, is it enough already? Is it have worked for so long? So if he decided to do that, then he will have more time to help you together with Pamasuri to do the Dharma work and website work. Then that time it will be even more beautiful. So sadhu.